Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. From our health discussion today, the State University of Campinas in Brazil, they're looking at nicotinamide, riboside, and how it increases aerobic performance. That's important. That's NAD, that's precursor and improves the mitochondrial oxidation capacity and mitochondrial biogenesis in several of your organs, including your heart, your brain, and your muscles. So we're going to talk about how you can have a better workout, be in better shape by using NAD. Now, that's separate from all the things it does in helping extend our lifespan. That's only one of many of our topics today. But then good news concerning our movement, your movement, my movement. We have begun our efforts. Anytime you see that there's a crisis, you always see first responders, and that's why I hold them in such high regard. When the firefighters, police officers, emergency medics, all the people descended upon the World Trade Organization, they were there to help people save their lives. And they did, frequently costing them theirs. But then we think of any time that we need to have a crisis addressed. Now, the frontline doctors who are helping people survive COVID by using techniques that are not what is recommended by either the White House or Anthony Fauci or Bill Gates or the people in power or the left, not the regular left. I'm talking about the totally compromised, fully corrupt, corporate Democrat left, the neocons, those who will talk about peace and harmony and then wage wars, like Obama and his group, and that's who's going to be in the White House again, probably. Same people, smile to you, wonderful coverage by the press and the media, glowing tributes, you can win a Nobel Prize and then invade seven countries and they don't see a contradiction. But what are we doing? Where are the first responders to our political crisis? That's a different story. But now we have those responders. It started on Saturday in Great Britain, in London, in Denmark, in Rome, and most importantly in Berlin. Robert Kennedy Jr. was there, and he was there at the behest of millions of people who are concerned about mandatory vaccines that everyone should be concerned about. He is also concerned about 5G, he's concerned about cashless society, all the things we've been discussing on this program for years. Oh, and by the way, over the weekend, it was shown in a big story that Elon Musk has now come up with a way of planting a computer chip in your brain that can help you. That's the front story. Never believe the front story. But in point of fact, can give you information and messages and retrieve information and messages from your body and from your brain. That's called transhumanism. I told you it was an advanced stage. It's here now. And this is just the beginning. And I consider it the most irresponsible and dangerous technology, because what in the world do you think they're going to do with a nation that is divided in groups between those who are so stressed and so overwhelmed by the problems we face today that if you could take them away from that, in a heartbeat they would go, oh, you mean I can be in a virtual state of bliss anytime I want? Yeah. And so I don't have to take the tranquilizers or the Xantax or the... No. No, you just put this on and just a simple little computer chip, no problem. It can even be done robotically, and that's, by the way, part of what they're selling on. A robot will inject, take a piece about the size of a coin out of your skull and implant this. And there's a way of implanting it so it doesn't break the blood vessels. That was the emphasis. Oh, yeah. Don't worry about having a blood vessel punctured and therefore internal brain bleeding, which could kill you. No, this knows where the blood vessels are. It scans them. Oh, that sounds terrific. Well, it's here, and when it's here, then look what the people are going to sign up for it. versus those people who say, hold on a second, I don't want you in my brain. I don't want you reading my thoughts. Well, all this is being challenged now. We are starting a worldwide campaign. And if I was in New York, I would have been leading a demonstration with this audience, but I can't be at this moment. But we are on our side. We are getting thousands of responses. We're overwhelmed with responses from all types of physicians and scientists and Nobel Prize winners all over the world saying, yes, Wikipedia is just vile and wrong and a tool of the special deep state interest groups. So we're challenging it. And our stop funding Wikipedia, walk away from Wikipedia, it's working. More on that. But that's already implemented, and Robert F. Kennedy was one of the first persons, if not the first person, to sign the petition, and he's got his whole group behind this. We're working together on a lot of these projects. There's a bunch of us working together. We've had strategy sessions, and so all of our research over the years on 5G, they're using that, and on let's just say, the vaccine dangers. So our movement has started, and today we're going to take you. You can watch this, by the way. You can go to prn.fm, go to the main page, scroll down, and you can watch it in real time. Or if you don't have a computer, you can listen to it. But we're going to play you two segments with Robert F. Kennedy today, because our campaign, meaning we the people's campaign, it started. You know that silent majority that I was telling you about? And there are hundreds of millions of us watching how our country has been taken over as a police state by special interest groups and manipulated. And so we're pushing back peacefully, but also with information, not just slogans or euphemisms, but real information. Okay, so that's on today's schedule. So let's begin. We have the latest on health and healing. And by the way, I also want to mention, we want to thank the thousands, what was it, 10, I was told by Jesse this morning, 10,500 people over the weekend alone. Those of you who come to prn.fm for your information, we have a ton of it every day. Information you will not find anywhere else. Free. It's a public service. Non-political. We don't take sides. We don't advocate for anything in the way of identity. We believe in human nature. We believe in this. The sanctity of all life. And we have a newsletter. And if you would like to sign up for the new PRN newsletter, all you have to do is just give us your email. It's free. Go to prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. And if you want to download any of our programs from our archives, our archive number, and a lot of people use this, I mean thousands every evening, write it down, please. Wherever you're at, you can call this number and hear up to five different programs, one phone call, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And to give you an idea how popular that is, I think that last figure I was told was 16,000 people on the radio, like Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity and all those people. We were right at the top of that bunch. And this is like 7 years in a row we're at the top. In the whole world, we're right up in the top 10. So a lot of people use this for their information. Now to the latest on health and healing. According to research emanating out of Brazil, they found that NAD, that's the precursor that helps us, that's what gives you energy, and is really good when you want to increase your aerobic performance. And that's important. So a simple supplement, not expensive, easy to get, can help you. Now, by the way, there are at least 20 things it does as far as anti-aging, but I'm only talking about improving the skeletal muscle and energizing through its mitochondrial benefits. So if you want to have more, better, stronger muscles, it helps. Want to have better exercise, it helps. I'm always asked an interesting question by people generally 40 and over. Should they take a nap? And if so, for how long? And I ask him, well, are you tired at different types of the day? What time do you wake up in the morning? How much sleep do you get? Do you have a quality of sleep? Can you sleep through the night without waking up? Do you wake up to urinate? If so, how long before bedtime do you drink any liquid? Do you have any caffeine in the evening? Do you overeat at a meal? Do you eat anything later after dinner that could be causing your metabolism to gear up? Simple questions. How much daylight is outside or not background light? Is there any blue light, like from a computer or television on? All this can stimulate the central nervous system, keep you awake. But there's new research coming from Guangzhou Medical University in China talking about how much of a nap is good, but the risks to your heart and longevity if you take too long of a nap. So the good news is that if you take a relatively short nap, meaning no longer than 60 minutes, ideally preferably 30 minutes, that's good. That can rest you, that can de-stress you, can relax your musculature, all good. But if you take more than an hour nap on a regular basis, that can lead to heart disease and shorten your lifespan. You have a greater overall incidence of death and cardiovascular disease if you take long naps, and some people do take long naps. Now, a lot of people will take a nap if they have cancer or on chemotherapy, if they have chronic fatigue syndrome, if they have Lyme's disease. And what I suggest for those people is to take a nap on a magnetic mattress. There are a lot of different magnetic mattresses on the market, but you can get a small one and take it and just set an alarm for 15 minutes at a time. Now, you could actually take two of those 15 minutes in a day, but never take a nap within 5 hours going to sleep because it'll disrupt your sleep. So make sure that your naps are not too long. Also, from Seoul Clinical Laboratories in South Korea comes a study about what happens when you don't have enough vitamin D or selenium that can decrease your immune defenses against COVID-19. Now, this is exactly what I've been saying from the very beginning. One, I've been advocating that you look at the research on regular medications. Now, I never advocate medications. I almost always advocate alternative approaches, but when a drug is life-saving, I'm going to advocate it because it can save a life. And hydroxychloroquine in combination with zinc and either one of two antibiotics has been shown in 51 studies, clinical studies, to save lives. In some cases, 100% of the lives. In other cases, depending upon when you take it. And the studies that did not show benefit were because they were giving it to critical care patients in the hospital. There, it doesn't work. So if six of the studies were of hospital patients at the end of their life taking it, it's not going to work. Those were not legitimate studies. And two of the studies had to be yanked from the British Medical Journal of the Lancet, also the New England Journal of Medicine, because they gave false information. That means that the preponderance of information on what you could do to prevent if you are at risk, that's the key. If you're at risk, like a frontline worker, then yes, prophylactically, it works. And also, if you're at the early stage and you have multiple risk factors, it works. And there's multiple evidence of that happening. And we're actually getting to a critical tipping point. First, it was just one nurse. Then it was two nurses, then five nurses, then 10 nurses coming forward from different emergency rooms saying how we're dealing with this is just stupid. It's wrong. It's killing people. Putting people on ventilators that shouldn't have been on and not using hyperbaric oxygen, which could have saved lives. And then having people, long lines of people, go into hospitals to get tested, completely healthy people, and then telling them, now you have to be quarantined in the hospital for 7 to 10 days and putting them in the ward with people with full-blown COVID. Well, of course they're going to be infected. Now they're going to take their infection home with them and give it to a senior adult or someone with comorbidity, and that person's going to end up getting sick or dying. So everything that was done wrong. But now you have many medical doctors, just a few originally, then dozens and hundreds, and now thousands around the world who are saying they're treating people with inexpensive pennies cost for a medication that is safe. It's safer than aspirin, and it's saving lives. So why then would the media say no to it? Why would they condemn it? Why would they attack the doctors personally? And because the media is fully, completely owned by special interest groups. I believe nothing. I don't look at any of these media. I don't read the New York Times anymore, or Washington Post, or CNN, because I can't trust anything they say. These people are completely compromised. Completely. So remember I said the first thing you should do is build up your immune system, because we all face, we can't live in a bubble. You can't live in a sterile environment. You know, I live on a farm. I've lived either on a ranch or a farm my whole adult life. And when you're around animals and barns, you're getting in danders and all forms of molds and into your immune system. And your immune system finds these things, tags them, creates antibodies, and it protects you. So my immune system is strong. Tri-State Healing Center for 15 years, every day. I would sit there and hold patients' hands. I don't care what disease they had. I never put a mask on, gloves on, never got sick. Strong immune system. Now, I'm not advocating anyone do what I do, because I also take precautions when using gloves when I, you know, get into a cab. And by the way, before COVID, my friends thought I was very eccentric, and on this point, I guess I am. But when I walk into a health food store and I see them take with their hands some carrots out of a bag that have not been washed, I, you know, say, no, I want to see the carrot washed, scrubbed down, peeled. Then I'll have a carrot juice. Well, I don't want to end up with some bacteria that my immune system couldn't help with. You know, viruses, that's one thing. Parasites and bacteria, that's a different thing. So we have to realize we have hundreds of millions of poisonings here in the United States because of water pollution and food pollution, because we're just not washing our hands and we're not washing produce, and that's dangerous. You're not going to build a stronger immune system by getting salmonella, okay? Or any of these other hundreds of different toxic bacteria. But having clean food in your life, yeah, that'll help you, including probiotics. That will also help you. But the most important two nutrients you can take to build up your immune system are vitamin D and vitamin C. And it's in the peer-reviewed literature. Google vitamin D and immune system, and you'll see all these studies that if you're deficient, you're more susceptible to disease. If you have abundant amount, you're good to go. Same thing with vitamin C. And that's what this is saying. It's saying specifically when you're deficient in vitamin D, and most Americans are, and selenium, and most Americans are, you're more susceptible to COVID. They also say you should have vitamin B1, B6, B12, vitamin D, folate, selenium, and zinc. And most people don't. All right, 76% of people tested were deficient. And that's big time. So make sure you're taking a vitamin supplement. Okay, simple. Alpha-lipoic acid is associated with less inflammation among diabetics with a history of heart attacks. That could be big. This is from Bogomolets National Medical University in Ukraine, published in the Journal of Medicine and Life. And they found that in this study, those who took alpha-lipoic acid had fewer markers for inflammation among type 2 diabetics with prior myocardial infarction. That's a heart attack. So if you've had a heart attack and you want to help prevent a second heart attack, well, that's a separate protocol. You know, L-carnitine and magnesium and in the right amounts, of course, and cayenne is a blood thinner. Yes, but the key is we're not talking about that. We're talking about if you've had a heart attack and you're diabetic, the second heart attack is the killer. So alpha-lipoic acid can help that, and that's good. Also, from the University of East Anglia, which is in the United Kingdom, they have a research on vitamin C. And here's what they say. If you're over the age of 50, if you take vitamin C every day, it helps you retain your muscle mass. so vitamin C could be the key to better muscles in later life. The study was published just today showing that older people who eat plenty of vitamin C compound, commonly found in foods like your citrus and berries and vegetables, having a nice glass of green apple, lemon, and grapefruit juice, that's good, lots of vitamin C. And by the way, it depends upon the time of year that you're getting your vitamin C from oranges. I just went to the farmer's market, and I go to a farmer's market way out. It's a 40-minute drive for me because I want to go to where it's locally grown by the culture that lives there, and it's a completely different farmer's market than any place you've ever been in your life. About 80 stalls, and they specialize. They're open every day of the year, but I get a lot of fruit that I can't find anywhere else. I grow a lot of fruit. At least seasonally, there's something growing every single day. Just finished eating the Japanese persimmons, and a great fruit that very few people eat, which is a guava. You throw the whole thing into a blender, and you put your protein in there, and it makes a great protein shake. But these are oranges, and you can tell they're really good because they're not orange. They're green and orange and yellow at different shades. That means they haven't been gassed. A lot of commercial citrus is gassed. But I counted, and it took 15 oranges, juicing them by hand, as I do, to make one glass of orange juice. 15. Normally, it should take 4. Why? Because it's not orange season. So the oranges won't start coming until about December. December, January, and February, that's really your heavy orange season. So they don't have enough juice in them. That's why you got to let fruit really ripen on the vine. And then you get your best stuff. But in any case, that's one way of getting your vitamin C. But then be realistic. How much vitamin C are you getting from an orange or a glass of orange juice? I estimated that my glass of orange juice gave me about 300 milligrams of vitamin C. Okay, that's a very small amount. I start at 3,000 milligrams and go up from there when I'm counseling people, because I know what works. I've probably done more work with people with serious illnesses and vitamin C than anyone in American history. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people getting intravenous vitamin C with phenomenal results. So get your vitamin C every day. Yes, you can get some vitamin C from food, and that's good, and you should. But if you want to keep your muscle mass, you want to keep strong, then supplement as well. Now, this is important because people tend to lose muscle mass as they get older, leading to sarcopenia. That's a condition characterized by loss of skeletal muscle mass and function. And you become more fragile, and that reduces the quality of your life. There are things you simply won't do because, well, I'm not strong enough to do it. So let's just remember, you're going to lose about 50%. No. You're going to lose, let me rephrase that. If you're over 50, you're going to lose 1% of your skeletal muscle mass each year. So let's say you're 75. You've lost 25% of your muscle mass. Boy, that's when your skin begins to hang and look all crepey, and you have no tone, and you get that indented look in your cheeks, and your neck gets very thinned out. You don't have to have that happen, all right? Let's not be frail and in poor health to suffer from sarcopenia and physical disability. Let's take our vitamin C, keep our muscle mass. Also, vitamin E supplements shows promise to treat people with NAFLD. And this was published in the Journal of Gastroenterology and Hepatology. By the way, the initials stand for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, meaning your liver is diseased, but not because you've been drinking alcohol, and that's epidemic levels today. And that's mainly because of it's sugars, lots of refined carbohydrates, fructose. All right, so vitamin E can help that. And you get a lot of benefit from the omega-3 fatty acids for your heart. University of Milan, published in Pharmacological Research. Yes, The omega-3 fatty acids really help, and in this case, 81,000 participants, it helped reduce heart attacks and heart disease. So take your omega-3 every day. And if you want to have better memory and lower your risk of the incidence of cognitive impairment, according to Columbia University, magnesium, higher magnesium concentration does that. And that is important. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 26 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going directly to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at a press conference the day before the rally, and then we're not going to play the whole thing, but then we're going to go to the rally because some of the things he was saying, spot on, exactly happened as the way that he said it would happen, that the media is going to mischaracterize our event. Mind you, when you have nearly 40,000 people at one event, you're going to draw some attention. Then why is it that the media didn't cover it honestly? Well, because they have their own agenda. And we have our agenda, and that's telling the truth, especially concerning corona deaths. Oh, and by the way, just so you know, there's brand new research. I don't know if I'll have time today to get into it, but our research shows that we've been given misinformation concerning the deaths on this and how many people have actually died from coronavirus. And who's our source? The CDC. That's correct. The CDC. I'll save that so that we'll get to these figures. And the figures really show that this is not a pandemic. Can the virus kill you? Yes. Should we pay attention? Absolutely. Should we have everyone taking all these tests? Well, now the New York Times did someone just sent me this article that was contradictory. Well, the tests are not accurate, but take them anyway. Why should I take a test that's not accurate? What if the test shows I'm positive when I'm not? And then I'm suddenly marked, I'm on a computer, I'm considered a danger, I'm going to be the first person mandated to have the vaccine or somehow be under house arrest or physically restrained? No, I don't like where this is going, and we should all not like where this is going. We'll have a discussion when time permits on the newest information that should give you a sense of pause, that the people telling you everything you need to know about the pandemic are giving you only their version, and they are wrong on this. And I'll give you the facts way off. I mean, way off on their figures. And you think, how in the world could they be that wrong? And also, from the American Institute of Economic Research, quote, lockdowns and mass mandates do not lead to reduced COVID transmission rates or deaths, new studies suggest. Okay, we'll talk about that at the same time we talk about the new figures to show you how few people are actually dying from the COVID virus versus dying from comorbidity conditions. A break, and then Robert F. Kennedy, because this is the new campaign to challenge the corrupt politicians, the greedy and profiteering scientists and vaccine companies and Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and the completely captured media, all lying about everything every day.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
I run the biggest water protection group in the world. It's called Waterkeeper Alliance. And back in the early 2000s, I was suing big coal-burning power plants in the United States for discharging mercury. At that time, and my only concern was the impact of the mercury on fish and on human health of the human beings who ate the fish. Around that time, it came to my attention that there was also large amounts of mercury in vaccines, much larger exposures to children than any child would ever get from eating fish. And so I began to address that, and we started an organization that was trying to have a very limited scope, which was trying to remove the mercury from vaccines. Little by little, I came to understand that there were larger problems with vaccines. And the central problem, and the one we were most deeply concerned with, was that vaccines in the United States were not safety tested. They have an exemption that is not available to any other medical product. And that exemption, which most people cannot even believe, is an artifact of CDC's legacy as the Public Health Service, which was a quasi-military agency. And at the time that the vaccine system, the vaccine program was launched, the purpose was a national defense purpose. And they wanted to make sure that vaccines could be quickly formulated and deployed in order to derail attacks by foreign countries with biological substances. So they removed the regulatory impediments, including the necessity to test vaccines, to safety test vaccines against placebos. And so my very narrow purpose in starting the Children's Health Defense was to address this problem and get vaccines properly safety tested. Because if they're not safety tested, nobody can tell you with any medical authority whether that vaccine is injuring more people than it's saving. And yet, as we continued on with this advocacy, it became very clear that there were other problems as well. There was problems with the corruption in our political system. The pharmaceutical companies had not only corrupted our politicians with huge amounts of lobbying money, they had captured the agencies that are supposed to protect Americans from public health threats, the CDC, the FDA, the HHS. They had captured the press in our country. Huge influxes of advertising dollars, which had neutralized the press, and they had effectively subverted American democracy by neutralizing all of those institutions that the founding fathers of our nation had created to stand between a greedy corporation and a vulnerable child. The Congress had been corrupted. The regulatory agencies were captured. They had become sock puppets for the industry they're supposed to regulate. The press had been sidelined. And worst of all, they had passed a law in our country in 1986 that gave pharmaceutical companies complete immunity from liability. So there was no incentive for any of those companies to make vaccines safe. And little by little, we recognized that this was not just an American issue. This was a global issue. I came 2 years ago when I was arguing the Monsanto case, and I met my partner here, Senta Dupuy. And Senta already understood the connection that had taken me so long to formulate between toxics in our environment, the capture of our agencies and our political structures by those powerful companies. She also recognized that pharmaceutical companies were the most powerful, more powerful than oil, more powerful than the chemical industry, and a greater threat not only to our children's health, but to all the institutions of democracy, not in the United States, but all around the globe. And I'm very glad that Tina Choi helped Senta to organize Children's Health Defense Europe. We are here today to announce, to launch the beginning of this organization. We've been very, very successful in the United States. We recognize that the pharmaceutical industries is operating and capturing politicians and running governments in every nation on the globe. And if we win this battle just in one nation, the United States, we're still going to lose it globally. So we need people of goodwill, people who have courage, people who have a nonconformist way of thinking, who understand that we are being lied to, that the entire political structure today is saturated in pharmaceutical propaganda. And we have watched over the past few years something that is extraordinary. We are at an inflection point, I believe, in human history. The largest and most critical inflection point that humanity has ever encountered. For many years, totalitarian and authoritarian states have used the power of fear to engineer compliance in populations. I grew up understanding what happened in World War II in our country, and during the Nuremberg trials, Hermann Göring was asked by the prosecutor, how did you make the German people comply? And Göring said, it's not just Germany. This works in any country, whether it's a fascist country or a communist country or a monarchy or a democracy. All the rulers need to do is to tell people that there's something they need to be fearful of, to point a finger at that source of their fear. And you can make human beings do anything you want. You can make them go to slaughter like sheep. You can make them obey. During the same Great Depression that spawned Adolf Hitler, we were very lucky in our country that we had a leader, Franklin Roosevelt. And he said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. He understood that fear would drive us into totalitarianism. Well, the biosecurity agenda that people like Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and Davos and all of these people who are running now the global economy, they have understood for years that they have a power that no totalitarian government has ever had available to it, which is the biosecurity. You know, and Hitler could point at the Jews and say, those are the big threat. We need to be frightened of them. And you guys, everybody else needs to obey so that we can fight them off. Other countries were scared of the Bolsheviks. In the United States, you know, our demagogues point to the Mexicans or dark-skinned people and say we need to be scared of them, or terrorists. And you know, all of those things get us to voluntarily relinquish our human rights, our civil rights, and walk like sheep into the abattoir. But now they have a source of fear that is the most pervasive and all-encompassing power that they've ever had, which is the fear of pandemics. Governments love pandemics the same way that they love wars, because it gives them power, it gives them control, and it gives them the capacity to impose obedience on human beings. And today we have an inflection of new technologies that give governments the capacity to impose controls on populations that have never been imagined before in human history by any tyrant in history. We have 5G, which has created a surveillance state. 5G is not here for your benefit. It's not here so that it's gonna make your life better because you can download your video game in 6 seconds rather than 29. The only reason for 5G is because it allows these big data companies run by Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and Jeffrey Bezos to harvest our data, to listen to your conversations on your cell phone. They've always been able to do that, but there was no way for them to transport that data, to subject it to analytics, and then to monetize it and to sell it. Bill Gates today is building a city in Arizona, 80,000 people, with a data center that will be able to take all of this new data, the data on your Alexis in your home. You think that Alexis is working for you? Alexis isn't working for you. She is spying on you. Your cell phone is spying on you. They have biometric facial recognition systems, your GPS. All the satellites that Bill Gates brags that his satellites will be able to monitor every square inch of the planet 24 hours a day. They're gonna know, and then they have another innovation, which is digital currency. And once they have digitalized our currency and gotten rid of the cash economy, they have absolute control over us because they'll be able to tax every transaction. the banks will be able to cash in on every transfer of wealth, every transaction, no matter how minuscule, no matter how small, but also they'll be able to enforce obedience. Because if you're disobedient, they'll be able to shut down your bank account and starve you, and you'll have no access to cash. And many people argue that this pandemic was a plandemic, that it was planned from the outset, that it's part of a sinister scheme. I can't tell you the answer to that. I don't have enough evidence. A lot of it feels very planned to me, but I don't know. But I will tell you this. If you create these mechanisms for control, they become weapons of obedience for authoritarian regimes, no matter how beneficial or innocent the people who created them. Once you create them, they will be abused. 100% guarantee that they will be abused. And all of the people who are out on the street now, who are arguing with these, with this new imposition that we're seeing all around us, of authoritarian control, of people being told, wear your mask. And you know, I think everybody in Europe, everybody in Germany, everybody in the United States, if they were told, here's why you should wear a mask, here's the science that says it will help, here is the science that says it works, that you will stop transmission to other people, everybody would wear it with no problem. What we know is that we're not being dealt with honestly. We're being told, this is the science. But it's not, it's an appeal to authority. It's science because Tony Fauci and Bill Gates tell us it's science.
Okay. Now, that's the press conference on Friday, and listen to what he said. He's on board with all of us now about 5G and its dangers, and we have a new article on 5G coming out. I've got three new articles this week that are on fluoride, 5G, and also on Wikipedia. We'll be bringing those to you. So he's also saying what many of us have been saying, and that is, don't allow the government and the banks to go to a cashless society, because then you would be given only the ability to either deposit or withdraw credits or purchase things based upon digital currency. That means they would have 100% control. If they didn't want you to get on to a plane or to buy food, then you wouldn't be able to. It's just one more form of tyranny, and there's no freedom of choice there. So just be aware that that's what they're up to. All right? Now we're going to go to the demonstration itself. And the American media completely misstated this. But he predicted this during his speech. Again, this is where a large group of people peacefully are meeting and having different speakers, medical doctors and scientists, talk about why we shouldn't be rolling up our sleeves to get a completely experimental, never before used vaccine, which the FDA has acknowledged they're going to bypass a lot of the human safety trials. And do you really want to have an experimental vaccine that has no proper testing, no double-blind placebo-controlled studies, no long-term look go into your body? That would just be the height of irresponsible action. So here is Robert F. Kennedy with nearly 40,000 people. And this is just in one city. And that was also happening in countries across Europe. And it's only going to accelerate.
And to shift us all, to begin the process of shifting us all to a digital currency, which is the beginning of slavery.
Und sie haben den Anfang geschaffen für eine digitale Währung. Und das ist der Beginn der Sklaverei.
Because if they control your bank account, they control your behavior. But back at home in the United States, the newspapers are saying that I came here today to speak to about 5,000 Nazis.
Zu Hause in den Vereinigten Staaten behaupten die Zeitungen, ich wäre hierher gekommen, um mit 5,000 Nazis zu reden.
And tomorrow, they're going to report that yes, I was here and I spoke to maybe 3,000 to 5,000 Nazis.
Und morgen werden sie genau das berichten, dass ich zu etwa 83 bis 5,000 Nazis geredet haben werde.
But I look at this crowd and I see the opposite of Nazism.
Und wenn ich in die Menge schaue, sehe ich das Gegenteil von Nazis.
I see people who love democracy.
Ich sehe Menschen, die Demokratie lieben.
People who want open government.
Menschen, die eine offene Regierung wollen.
People who want leaders that are not going to lie to them.
Menschen, die Führungsführer haben wollen, von denen sie nicht belogen werden.
People who are not leaders who will not make up arbitrary rules and regulations to orchestrate obedience of the population.
Wir wollen keine Anführer, die wahllos irgendwelche Regelungen erlassen, um unsere Demut, um unsere Unterwürfigkeit zu erwirken.
We want health officials who don't have financial entanglements with the pharmaceutical industry, who are working for us and not Big Pharma.
Wir wollen Anführer, die keine Verbindungen mit der Pharmaindustrie haben, die für uns arbeiten, nicht für die Pharma-Lobby.
We want officials who care about our children's health and not about pharmaceutical profits or government control.
Wir wollen Politiker, die sich um die Gesundheit unserer Kinder kümmern und nicht um den Profit der Pharma-Lobby und ihren eigenen Profit.
I look at this crowd. I see all the flags of Europe. I see people of every color. I see people from every nation, every religion, all caring about human dignity, about children's health, about political freedom. This is the opposite of Nazism.
Now, mind you, the mainstream media has acted as if none of these rallies mattered, that they were just a bunch of alt-right Nazis. So what is their agenda? Why would they out and out lie? And why wasn't this allowed to be promoted by any interviews with Robert Kennedy? Because he's persona non grata. But it did happen, just like the professor in earlier this week, we showed you the huge rally. We don't have exact numbers, but we're guesstimating around 30,000 people in Ireland in a square where a professor talked about hydroxychloroquine working, the vaccines not. And mind you, she's a pro-vaccine scientist and physician. Now we have Richard Gale on the line. Richard, I want to play both the press conference and that because this is the beginning of a movement, a worldwide movement that is taking on Big Pharma, the lies of the corporate shills that have infiltrated the technocracy positions within the FDA, U.S. Public Health Service, and all of its talking heads. And so we now have a major movement. We're leading the movement against Wikipedia and its lies and its character assassinations. And also we're helping with all the articles we've written to lead the movement against 5G at the very time when they're promoting 5G as the best thing in the world. And unfortunately, without critical thinking and research, people will accept that as true, not realizing that we're going to put more satellites in the air right now as we're speaking than all the other satellites in American history. Thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of new satellites. And that in itself can be all kinds of portend to different problems. But I want us to go through the last several minutes of the program today with Professor Mark Crispin Miller released a report on Friday, and it is from Bera Bernstein, and it says, quote, "The CDC's latest update on COVID-19 deaths quietly reveals that only 6% of those 153,504 actually died of COVID-19. That's 9,210 Americans died Because of COVID-19, the other 94% had two or three other serious illnesses, and the overwhelming majority were very advanced age, 90% in nursing homes. That's a pretty big boom. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the CDC page right this moment where that was found on. Let's just see, because I've got it up here. Yeah, it's very buried in the CDC site. You have to do a little searching and digging to even come up with it. But it's a large report with a lot of tables and showing, the excess data and there's different visuals also. But it states the actual wording is that this particular table is showing the types of health conditions and contributing causes mentioned in conjunction with deaths involving coronavirus disease. For 6% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned.
Okay, Richard, let's stop there for a moment.
Okay, and then for deaths with condition, I was just going to finish that. That for all the other deaths, there were 2.6 additional conditions or causes of death.
Okay, let's stop for a moment because for WBAI, we have to give them 5 minutes at the end of the hour. They can come up, anybody, so we're going to say goodbye to WBAI listeners at this moment. But everybody can go over to prn.fm and continue because we're going to analyze this. This is very important. And here's my read on it, and I'd like yours. From the very beginning, a lot didn't make sense to me. Why? Because we were not seeing autopsies, and we were not seeing specific blood chemistry tests done on those who died. We were also not told that the people dying, for example, in Italy, were principally in one area of Italy, which is the second most polluted place on the planet outside of northern China, where they have all these industries and notoriously bad weather conditions as far as air pollution. And we have also multiple studies that if you are living in a place with bad air conditioning, a bad air quality, you're more susceptible to dying of all forms of death, plus COVID-19. So then we weren't told that these people were over the age of 80, which was exceeding their normal lifespan, that in addition to that, they had multiple comorbidities, frequently from a lifetime of smoking, emphysema, end-stage cancer, including lung cancer, end-stage, and heart disease, the three that commonly go together. And that's what they were dying from. Everybody was labeled as COVID death. And then we started seeing the same in Spain because the Spaniards are very heavy smokers. And we weren't told that they were looking at people in nursing homes, critical care centers, and hospice. That was excluded from the initial conversations. So we were led to believe that just any person in Italy, any person in China, any person in America that was dying, well, they were dying because of COVID, nothing else. And that terrified people. But that wasn't true. For example, in New York State, 55% minimally of the COVID deaths came from nursing homes. And that was because there were no COVID deaths initially. There were normal deaths, but they took COVID patients that were in critical care facilities and put them right back into the nursing home, which infected everyone. Then it became a compounding comorbidity factor, meaning those conditions and COVID killed them. So that then is not a pandemic. That's not even the normal death rate for the annual flu, which kills anywhere from 30,000 to 80,000 people in the United States alone. So then we started seeing, with an undercover investigation that we played on this program, part of it, just a few minutes, that every single nursing home that the investigators called, the people said that the people were dying on the death certificates from COVID, but they were coming in from every kind of death, car wreck, COVID. Motorcycle death, COVID, heart attack, stroke, COVID. So they acknowledged they didn't know they were being recorded, so lies about all the people dying in those circumstances. Then we started to see that the worst thing you should do is quarantine an older person with a comorbidity, like obese person, or person with heart disease, or emphysema, with a younger person, That was the dumbest thing that could have been done, because the young person is asymptomatic. They have a strong immune system. They're going to work. They probably are going to pick up it relatively easily, a passable, transmissible virus, bring it home, and now that in their home, normal talking in an enclosed environment is going to keep that air particulate matter going to infect the older person. Now the older person gets sick and dies, but they had comorbidities. Not that. So the quarantine itself caused unnecessary infection and death. The quarantine should have been imposed in a different manner, treating people for their original underlying conditions, heart disease, cancer, etc., diabetes, and without the young people being there. But it wasn't. So it was a disaster of a huge scale. And then on top of that, you then have no medications for COVID, but you stopped using the elective surgery and other medications in a hospital because people feared if I go to the hospital and I have cancer, if I go to the hospital and I have heart disease, I could die in the hospital. So then people began to die who could have been treated and saved from their original comorbidities, but they were afraid to get treatment. That's another cause of death. So when you look at all these compounding factors, they were all conflated as one. Every death is COVID death. And then the incentive in hospitals, huge financial incentives if a person died from COVID, not so if they died of some other cause of death. Huge incentive if you put them on a ventilator, not so if they died without these respirators. So those all taken into account, you see how this was weaponized, commodified, completely commercialized, and we got the worst health statistics ever to create a public health policy. That's my own personal opinion. Yours, please.
No, I agree with everything you say, Gary, increasingly. And the other thing that we have also seen kind of amplifies this, these warp statistics that we're seeing, and we mentioned this before, but it's the increased use of the PCR technology that's being used. You know, Kari Mollis, who you knew, you know, the Nobel Prize winner for who developed PCR, he was very certain. PCR was a manufacturing technology. It's really what it was. It was so you can replicate DNA sequences billions or even billions of times. You could replicate them for research and study, but it was never designed for being a diagnostic tool for detecting viruses. That was just it. I mean, that was just the basic thing, and that was in Kari Mollis' bill. It had stated as such, but it is being used for that reason, and that's another thing why all of our figures and statistics are so skewed, is because of that. You know, even with these the so-called COVID deaths, you still would they're still doing testing, but you would use PCR to do that determine. But you could be just looking at old traced fragments of some old COVID infection that you had who knows how long ago. Doesn't mean that the person even had it you know, in an infectious state or they were asymptomatic throughout, and it was other causes that they had actually died from.
And you realize so that they could use that positive COVID test, as false as it is, to mandate that you be vaccinated or some other form of medical treatment that they're going to be patenting coming out. I just see this as horrific. I see that we've been gamed and played.
You know, it's interesting because my daughter's going to be going to school, starting school. She goes to a private boarding school, but she's a day student. And so we got a notice, and this is upstate New York, I'm up in the Hudson Valley. And the headmaster sent out a message that they're unable to test the students with just the quick rapid test because there's kids going to be coming from other countries and other parts of the of the nation for the boarding part. So they're going to have to send, and they're required, they have to test everybody. So they're going to be doing PCR. That's all that's being offered for these schools are going to be reconvening and boarding schools. So it's all these kids coming back, you know, being testing positive for something they don't have.
It's terrible because, remember, those same kids are then going to be called upon by the state health officials saying, you're the first ones to get the vaccine. Anyone testing positive will get the vaccine. Let's get Mary Holland on to talk about the Nuremberg Treaty, because treaties are supposed to supersede state laws and federal mandates. Yeah. Let's see what she has to say, since she's a constitutional lawyer and scholar from New York University, professor of law there. Let's see what she has to say on this, all right?
Yes. Certainly.
Okay, good. More tomorrow. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.